Chapter 27. Chapter 27 describes the third conflict between the brothers Jacob and Esau. The first was in the womb and at birth, Genesis chapter 25, verses 21 through 28. The second was over the birthright, Genesis chapter 25, verses 29 through 34. And the third in this chapter is over the birthright blessing from their father Isaac. Every family in Genesis had profound conflicts. Families without conflict exist, but they are not the norm. One way to view the Torah and the rest of the Bible is as an instruction manual in how to elevate our lives despite our troubled origins. Verse 1. When Isaac was old and his eyes were too dim to see, he called his older son Esau. That the Torah refers to Esau as Isaac's older son, Beno HaGadol, rather than his firstborn, Bechor, strongly suggests the Torah views the sale of the birthright as valid. Esau will always be the chronologically older son, albeit by a matter of minutes. But the Torah no longer considers him to have the status of firstborn. Verse 1 continued, and said to him, "My son." He answered, "Here I am." Esau answered with the Hebrew word hineni, which is the same response that Abraham gave to God, Genesis chapter 22, verse 1, and that Joseph will later give to Jacob, Genesis chapter 37, verse 13. This term, which is similar to yes, sir, shows Esau was a dutiful son. In fact, the Torah never depicts Esau as a bad person, only as unworthy of and uninterested in carrying on the Abrahamic monotheistic tradition. Verse 2. And he said, "I am old now, and I do not know how soon I may die." Verse 3. "Take your gear, your quiver and bow, and go out into the open and hunt me some game." The request provides another indication, as does Abraham's serving milk and meat to his guests, Genesis chapter 18, verse 8. The patriarchs were unfamiliar with many later Jewish laws. The laws of kosher slaughtering, which ordain that animals permitted for consumption be slaughtered with one smooth stroke that kills an animal almost instantly, would forbid shooting an animal intended for a meal with a bow and arrow, since that could result in a prolonged death. As noted, such records of pre-Jewish law behaviors of the patriarchs should be welcomed by traditional believers. They are powerful evidence for the antiquity and therefore the authenticity of the Torah text. If the Torah had been written much later, it is highly unlikely that practices of the patriarchs that ran contrary to later Jewish ritual laws would have been included. Verse 4. "Then prepare a dish for me such as I like, and bring it to me to eat, that I may give you my innermost blessing before I die." We know Isaac favored Esau over Jacob because he liked the food Esau hunted and prepared for him, Genesis chapter 25, verse 28. One might have expected more substance from a biblical patriarch. This, then, is yet another example of the Torah putting truth above hagiography in its portrayal of biblical heroes. It is clear from Rebekah's reaction, see the next three verses, this is no ordinary blessing, but one of supreme importance. Both Jacob and Rebekah sensed Isaac's death was imminent. The Hebrew rendered here as, "so that I may give you my innermost blessing," literally means "so that my soul may bless you." The blessing came from the depths of Isaac's soul. At this point, Esau could have confessed to his father he no longer possessed the birthright and may not have been deserving of this blessing. His failure to do so was also a form of deception, something rarely, if ever, mentioned in discussions of this episode. Verse 5. Rebekah had been listening as Isaac spoke to his son Esau. When Esau had gone out into the open to hunt game to bring home, verse 6, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, I overheard your father speaking to your brother Esau, saying, Verse 7, Bring me some game and prepare a dish for me to eat, that I may bless you with the Lord's approval before I die. In relating Isaac's instructions to Esau, Rebekah inserted the words, with the Lord's approval, to impress upon Jacob the blessing was part of a divine plan. Human intervention may be warranted to bring about God's plans. Verse 8. Now, my son, listen carefully as I instruct you. Rebekah was quite a woman. She was not only particularly kind, Genesis chapter 24, verses 15 through 25, she was particularly strong and decisive. The plan to ensure Jacob received the birthright blessing from Isaac was entirely her idea. We have no reason to think she was a deceptive person. However, she had not forgotten God's statement to her that the older son would serve the younger. She realized if she did not intervene, Esau would receive the blessing God intended for Jacob. Genesis chapter 25, verse 23. One might ask why God communicated only with Rebekah on the matter of the birthright. Perhaps it's because God is more likely to speak with those who are more likely to act on what God says. Rebekah acted because human intervention is often warranted to bring about God's plans. That is likely why God told Rebekah what to expect for her sons. The idea that God alone will bring about all his aims is foreign to the Torah. On the contrary, humans are not allowed to do nothing and wait for God to act. An example of religious people doing nothing while waiting for God to act involved Zionism, the late 19th and early 20th century movement to re-establish the Jewish homeland in Israel. Many religious Jews did not originally join the Zionist movement, arguing that only God could re-establish the Jewish state. By the time the modern state of Israel was declared in 1948, nearly all religious Jews acknowledged their error and came not only to support Israel, but to become among its most fervent supporters. Verse 9. Go to the flock and fetch me two choice kids, and I will make of them a dish for your father such as he likes. Verse 10. Then take it to your father to eat, in order that he may bless you before he dies. Verse 11. Jacob answered his mother Rebekah, But my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I am smooth-skinned. Verse 12, If my father touches me, I shall appear to him as a trickster, and bring upon myself a curse, not a blessing. Jacob was more concerned with his father's reaction to detecting the deception than with the morality of deceiving him. A close reading of Jacob's words strongly implies he did not believe he was doing anything wrong. He did not say, If my father touches me, he will realize that I am a trickster. Rather, he says, I will appear to him as a trickster. Jacob thought, not without merit, that his brother was the real trickster, since Esau was planning to claim the birthright blessing he had relinquished. Yet Jacob couldn't tell his father the truth, because he knew his father favored Esau, and would probably look askance at how Jacob had procured the birthright. The woman in this family is the strongest person in it. Verse 13. But his mother said to him, Your curse, my son, be upon me. Just do as I say, and go fetch them for me. Rebekah was willing to take full moral responsibility for her plan. Another example of her character and her strength. She was prepared to be judged by God and to defend her actions before him. Yet, though her plan was successful, in a certain sense she was cursed by this event, though not necessarily by God. Life has consequences for our behaviors independent of divine action. Subsequent to this episode, Jacob was forced to flee for his life. And though Rebekah believed he would be away for only a few days, see verse 44, he wound up being away for 20 years. the Torah does not record whether mother and son ever saw each other again. Verse 14. He got them and brought them to his mother, and his mother prepared a dish such as his father liked. Verse 15. Rebekah then took the best clothes of her older son Esau, which were there in the house, and had her younger son Jacob put them on. Verse 16. And she covered his hands and the hairless part of his neck with the skins of the kids. Verse 17. Then she put in the hands of her son Jacob the dish and the bread that she had prepared. It is noteworthy that whenever this story is discussed, the culpability for the deception is placed on Jacob, even though the plot was entirely conceived and orchestrated by his mother. Rebekah was clearly the active player. One example is described in this verse. She prepared the food and even placed it in her son's hands. Verse 18. He went to his father and said, "Father." Jacob probably wanted to speak as little as possible, lest his father recognize his voice. Or perhaps Jacob was nervously testing the waters. If Isaac recognized his voice and responded, "What is it you want, Jacob?" Jacob would likely have dropped the whole charade. Verse 18 continued, and he said, "Yes, which of my sons are you?" This was the first of four tests Isaac used to determine which son he was about to bless. Isaac appears to have been suspicious from the very beginning. Many commentators, both modern and medieval, have suggested that throughout this episode, Isaac was subconsciously aware of Jacob's identity, yet pretended to be deceived. In the view of these commentators, although Esau was his preferred son and the one he still regarded as the firstborn, Isaac nevertheless realized on some level that Esau was not the one to carry out God's promise to Abraham. Verse 19. Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn." Having procured the birthright from Esau, claiming firstborn status was not entirely a lie, but saying "I am Esau" was. That being said, I do not believe Jacob found deceiving his father easy. He did what he did at the command of his mother, whose judgment he thoroughly trusted. He also probably assumed if his father understood the situation as Rebekah did, he would have come to a similar conclusion regarding the birthright. Verse 19 continued, "I have done as you told me. Pray, sit up and eat of my game, that you may give me your innermost blessing." In his imitation of Esau, Jacob spoke almost the exact words that Isaac had used and Esau would later use. See verse 31. The only significant difference between their statements is Jacob's use of the word "nah," translated here as "pray," and often translated as "please" in requesting his father sit up and eat. See comments on the word "na" in Genesis chapter 22, verse 2. Verse 20. Isaac said to his son, "How did you succeed so quickly, my son?" And he said, "Because the Lord your God granted me good fortune." Sarna criticizes Jacob for invoking God's name in an outright lie. In Jacob's defense, he undoubtedly believed, thanks to his mother, that God was behind the whole project. There is no reason to believe Jacob thought he was violating God's will in receiving Isaac's blessing. Verse 21. Isaac said to Jacob, "Come closer that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son Esau or not." Still not convinced it is Esau before him, Isaac tried a second test, this time using his sense of touch to verify whom he is interacting with. Verse 22. So Jacob drew close to his father Isaac, who felt him and wondered, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, yet the hands are the hands of Esau." This is one of the most famous lines in the Bible. Writers and speakers have used this phrase to describe confusion and/or deception for thousands of years. It beautifully describes what we call mixed signals. Verse 23, he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau, and so he blessed him. A plausible defense of Jacob's deceptive behavior. Verse 24, he asked, "Are you really my son Esau?" And when he said, "I am," when a child reads this, the story can be, and ought to be, disturbing. How could Jacob so blatantly lie to his father? The Torah is written, as it must be, for both adults and children. Therefore, it is incumbent on adults to acknowledge its troubling aspects both for themselves and for their children. In this case, a parent can honestly say to a child, "It is almost always wrong to lie," and especially so to a parent. But Jacob can be defended for doing so here because he had legitimately obtained the birthright, and because the Torah makes clear its view that Esau spurned his birthright. Genesis chapter 25, verse 34. Had Esau been given the blessing, he would have obtained it through a lie, of omission, but a lie nevertheless. Moreover, the idea was hatched by Jacob's mother, Rebekah. Jacob was in a no-win situation. Whatever he did, whether he deceived his father or disobeyed his mother and allowed Esau to deceive Isaac, involved a moral and parental compromise. Finally, we have reason to believe that the end result was God's will. What was at stake here was nothing less than the survival of the nascent Abrahamic monotheist ideal through the only one of the two sons of Isaac who cared about that ideal. In order to do what is right, compromise is often, though certainly not always, necessary. Or to put it another way, those who wish to do good in this world cannot remain pure. It is often necessary to get one's hands dirty. That is what Rebekah and Jacob did. Verse 25. He said, "Serve me and let me eat of my son's game." This is the third attempt by Isaac to ascertain which son is present, this time using his sense of taste. Verse 25 continued, "That I may give you my innermost blessing." So he served him and he ate, and he brought him wine and he drank. Verse 26, "Then his father Isaac said to him, 'Come close and kiss me, my son.'" Verse 27, "And he went up and kissed him, and he smelled his clothes, and he blessed him, saying, 'Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of the fields that the Lord has blessed.'" The blind Isaac conducted his fourth test using the last of his functioning senses, the sense of smell, to convince himself Esau was before him. The extent of Rebekah's cunning is thus fully revealed. One might have wondered why Jacob needed his brother's garments to appear before a father incapable of seeing them. Now we realize she has anticipated the possibility that Isaac would try to smell Jacob. It is Esau's smell that he detects in Esau's clothing. Alter. Verse 28, "May God give you of the dew of heaven and the fat of the earth, abundance of new grain and wine." Isaac's blessing to Jacob was largely material, but Jacob's primary concern was to confer Abraham's spiritual legacy. Verse 29, "Let peoples serve you and nations bow to you." Younger brothers in the Torah. Verse 29 continued, "Be master over your brothers." The Torah frequently undermines what were, at the time of its writing, universal beliefs and practices. In the ancient world, it was believed that great men were usually firstborns. To this day, kingship is bestowed on the firstborn. With the preeminence of Jacob over Esau, the previous choice of Isaac over Ishmael, the subsequent preeminence of Joseph over his older brothers, and later of Moses over his older brother Aaron, the Torah asserts merit is more important than birth order. Indeed, to a statistically improbable extent, The great figures of the Bible are not firstborn sons, culminating in the case of King David, Israel's most famous king, who was the youngest of 8 sons. Verse 29 continued, "And let your mother's sons bow to you." The plural mother's sons, as in verse 37, simply emphasizes the comprehensive and absolute nature of Jacob's predominance, Sarna. Verse 29 continued, "Cursed be they who curse you, blessed they who bless you." This is a restatement of what God had said to Abraham, "I will bless those who bless you and curse him that curses you." This is in fact what has occurred for thousands of years. Those who have cursed the Jews have been cursed, and those who have blessed the Jews have been blessed. See the commentary to Genesis chapter 12, verse 3. Verse 30. No sooner had Jacob left the presence of his father Isaac, after Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, than his brother Esau came back from his hunt. Verse 31. He too prepared a dish and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, "Let my father sit up and eat of his son's game, so that you may give me your innermost blessing." Verse 32. His father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" And he said, "I am your son, Esau, your firstborn." Esau, too, is a deceiver. To his father's question, "Who are you?" Esau should simply have responded with his name. But by adding "your firstborn," he laid claim to the blessing he wanted to receive. Esau apparently either did not take seriously trading his birthright for a bowl of stew, or he did not want to acknowledge there were consequences to the sale. Whichever the case, he omitted any mention of his changed status. Withholding that information was deceptive, and he knew it. Otherwise, he would have answered the question, "Who are you?" by simply responding, "It's me, Esau." Verse 33. Isaac was seized with very violent trembling. Isaac was terrified by the prospect of being confronted by his son over so grievous a mistake. Verse 33 continued, "Who was it then," he demanded, "that hunted game and brought it to me? Moreover, I ate of it before you came, and I blessed him. Now he must remain blessed." In the ancient world, blessings were generally believed to be irrevocable. Isaac believed he could not fix the error by simply taking back his blessing to Jacob. On the other hand, it is plausible, though less likely, that Isaac was pretending the blessing could not be revoked. By way of illustration, let us imagine some servant overheard Isaac promising to give Esau the blessing, and the servant then acted in the same deceptive manner as Jacob. Would Isaac say he couldn't withdraw the blessing from the servant? I do not know the answer, but I doubt such a blessing would be regarded as irrevocable. Verse 34. When Esau heard his father's words, he burst into wild and bitter sobbing and said to his father, "Bless me too, father." The big, tough hunter was reduced to sounding like a child. It's hard not to feel sympathy for Esau. Verse 35. But he answered, "Your brother came with guile and took away your blessing." Verse 36. Esau said, "Was he then named Jacob, that he might supplant me these 2 times? First he took away my birthright, and now he has taken away my blessing." In his anguish, Esau acknowledged he no longer held the birthright, which undoubtedly came as news to his father. Esau's criticism of Jacob here was not accurate, since the birthright and the blessing were not unrelated. Customarily, the son with the birthright receives the blessing. So Jacob has really supplanted Esau only once, not 2 times. Verse 36 continued, and he added, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" Esau's only hope was to ask his father for an additional blessing. Verse 37, Isaac answered, saying to Esau, but I have made him master over you. I have given him all his brothers for servants and sustained him with grain and wine. What then can I still do for you, my son?" Verse 38, "And Esau said to his father, 'Have you but one blessing, father? Bless me too, father.' And Esau wept aloud." Why was Esau so distraught? There is no definitive answer. He did, after all, disdain the birthright. Genesis chapter 25, verse 34. Was he simply agitated over not receiving the material blessings given to his brother Jacob? Or did he now care about all aspects of the birthright? Or is there another possibility? Perhaps he cared about it all along, but in a moment of hunger and weakness, he was flippant about it. What good is a birthright if I'm dead of starvation? Maybe there's a lesson here about that. Some things in life are so serious, they should never be treated lightly, even in jest, or when one is in a cross mood. One thing is clear. On the previous occasion, the selling of his birthright in chapter 25, Esau exaggerated his hunger, demanded food like a barbarian, and showed no understanding of the birthright's significance. But now, on the day his father announced his intention to proffer the birthright blessing, Esau's behavior was appropriate. His father asked him to go hunting prior to receiving the blessing, and he willingly complied. He did not address his father in a boorish manner, for example, by asking for the blessing before going out to hunt the game. And even at this point, despite the pain he was feeling, he spoke respectfully to his father and made no angry accusations. "What's the matter with you? How could you not tell me apart from Jacob?" All Esau could say was, "Bless me too, father." So, unlike the earlier circumstances in chapter 25, it is clear that while the Torah favors Jacob, there is an undercurrent here of sympathy for Esau. Telushkin. Verse 39, "And his father Isaac answered, saying to him, 'See, your abode shall enjoy the fat of the earth and the dew of heaven above.'" If what Esau sought were the same material blessings his brother received, he did in fact receive them. There was obviously enough fat of the earth and dew of heaven for both brothers. Verse 40, "Yet by your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother." This had to be painful for Esau to take. Verse 40 continued, "But when you grow restive, you shall break his yoke from your neck." But Isaac in the end offered him some consolation. Verse 41. Now Esau harbored a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing which his father had given him. Esau's anger would cause Jacob many problems throughout the rest of his life. Jacob long suffered the consequences of having persuaded Esau to relinquish the firstborn blessing, but that does not necessarily mean he acted immorally. Nevertheless, here, as in so many other places, especially in the book of Genesis, the Torah makes clear we must endure the consequences of our actions, good and bad alike. As the great Bible scholar Nahama Leibowitz puts it, sin and deceit, however justified, bring in their turn ultimate punishment. But this is sometimes true when we have not engaged in wrongdoing of any kind. It is in the nature of this world that sometimes when we do precisely the right or noble thing, we still suffer for it. Hence the popular maxim, "No good deed goes unpunished." Verse 41, continued, "And Esau said to himself, 'Let but the mourning period of my father come, and I will kill my brother Jacob.'" Even at the moment of his greatest anger, Esau cared for his father. He would not kill his brother while Isaac was still alive, knowing the anguish that would cause his father. The Torah does not present very positive models in Genesis of sibling relationships. The first two brothers in history were Cain and Abel, and Cain killed Abel. Generations later, While there was no fraternal hatred between Isaac and Ishmael, they were separated almost their entire lives. The schism between Jacob and Esau was followed by Jacob's sons, who were so alienated by their youngest brother Joseph, they threw him into a pit, plotted to have him sold off into slavery, and then covered it all up by deceiving their father into believing he had been killed by a wild animal. The Torah recognizes sibling relationships are frequently not loving ones. Verse 42. When the words of her older son Esau were reported to Rebekah, how did Rebekah find out what Esau said to himself? We are not told, but somehow, as mothers so often do, she knew. When someone is carrying around the depth of rage Esau felt toward Jacob, it's almost inevitable that he won't be able to conceal it or keep it entirely to himself, particularly someone like Esau, who, with his unrestrained hunger and open weeping, is emotionally transparent. Verse 42 continued, she sent for her younger son Jacob and said to him, "Your brother Esau is consoling himself by planning to kill you." Verse 43, "Now, my son, listen to me. Flee at once to Haran, to my brother Laban." Verse 44, "Stay with him a while until your brother's fury subsides." Verse 45, "Until your brother's anger against you subsides." Rebekah thought Esau wouldn't remain angry at Jacob forever. The words translated as "stay with him a while" literally mean a number of days. With time, most people get over anger at a sibling. Or perhaps she was engaging in a mother's wishful thinking. Nothing means more to most parents than their children getting along with one another. Verse 45 continued, "And he forgets what you have done to him. Then I will fetch you from there. Let me not lose you both in one day." If Esau were to carry out his threat, not only would Jacob be dead, but Esau would then be condemned to death for murder. Even if that were not her concern, Rebekah may have well been referring to her emotional state if one son murdered the other. She could not have gone on loving the son who had murdered her other son, especially the one she favored. In this way, she would lose both. Verse 46. Rebekah said to Isaac, "I am disgusted with my life because of the Hittite women. If Jacob marries a Hittite woman like these from among the native women, what good will life be to me?" With this statement, reminiscent of Rebekah's hopelessness during the arduous pregnancy with her struggling twins, "If so, why do I exist?" Genesis chapter 25, verse 22. Rebekah prefaced her case to Isaac that Jacob should be sent away without mentioning the real reason. Esau was planning to kill him. The end of this chapter harkens back to the end of the previous chapter, which recounts that Esau took wives from among the Hittite women. Sarna believes her comment is also calculated to allay any lingering uneasiness Isaac might be feeling about his unwitting blessing of Jacob. Esau's choice in wives was a sign he would not carry on the legacy of Abraham and Isaac. Jacob must be prevented from making the same mistake.